If you don't sit in your lucky seat, your team could lose. So don't leave your lucky seat. But do pick up your phone or computer and order B-dubs to go. Or if you've got a big group, call in for the party menu. That way you can order wings, pick them up, and get back to your lucky seat. And if you do lose while sitting in your lucky seat, you can still feel lucky eating your feelings. Spicy feelings. Keep your superstitions. We do it for you. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Prices and participation vary. See participating locations for details. Void where prohibited.
This is the No Long Twos podcast. I'm your host, Mike Zavagno. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at No Long Twos, on Facebook at No Long Twos, and get all of our latest content at nolongtwos.wordpress.com. All aboard! Welcome to the first ever No Long Twos podcast. I'm your host, Mike Zavagno, and I want to sincerely thank all of you for tuning in today. Before we get started, I'd just like to talk to you guys a little bit about my vision for No Long Twos and kind of what I'm doing here. So as you may know, I started this website about a week ago. We've published a Eastern Conference preview, a Western Conference preview, and an awards preview, looking at, you know, who I think is going to win MVP, Rookie of the Year, where everybody's going to finish in each conference, and the eventual champion this season. I started this website basically because I love the NBA. I follow the NBA extremely closely. For the last couple of years, I've been wanting to kind of put my thoughts down somewhere, and I figured that, you know, what better place to do it than try to start it up on my own. The recent trends have been going more towards podcasting than writing. So here we are. We're going to start the No Long Twos podcast. We're going to try to get it off the ground, hopefully come to you guys a couple times a week, both with things on paper and then obviously in podcast form. My goal is to just look at the NBA through trends, statistical analysis, just kind of deeper dive into what's going on. You know, we'll be looking at it maybe day by day or week by week and seeing where things go from there. We don't necessarily have the most concrete of plans right now. Open to suggestions, as always. If there are things that you guys want us to cover or want to see, I'd be happy to take those into account and hopefully produce some content on them. Once again, thank you so much for starting out with us, and hopefully you'll enjoy where this goes as much as I do. Without further ado, we will start with the first ever No Long Twos podcast. I'm Mike Zavagno. I'm joined here by my co-host, Jake Hurley. What's up?
Not too much, Mike. Just happy to be here. Beautiful Sunday afternoon here in the lab in Philly. Just chopping up a little bit about preseason basketball and excited for the season to start this coming Tuesday.
Yeah, I will be in attendance to watch the banner go up, see the Cavs get their rings Tuesday. Obviously a huge day for both of us, a huge day in the land. We got the World Series and we got the banner raising, so probably the most lit day in the history of the city of Cleveland. And excited to be home for it, and hopefully we can take home a couple W's.
Absolutely.
We're just going to start right here at the top. Start at MVP. We're going to go through the individual awards. We'll then go through the All-NBA first, second, and third team selections. We have some All-Defense selections as well. And we'll end it up with our playoff teams and playoff picture. So we'll start with MVP here. I got Kawhi Leonard.
And I'm going with LeBron James this year.
Alrighty. So what was your thought process kind of going into and, you know, looking at this award, and what ultimately led you to LeBron?
Absolutely. So I think a couple things kind of factored in for me. One of the biggest things, one of the biggest storylines of this offseason was really the Golden State Warriors and their juggernaut team that they've put together with two-time reigning MVP Steph Curry, former MVP Kevin Durant, alongside the likes of Draymond Green and Klay Thompson. I really think LeBron James, I don't think he really has anything left to prove in his career, but I think really the MVP truly matters to him still. And I think that he's going to, again, lead the Cavs to the first seed in the Eastern Conference. And I think he'll play enough games, probably 70, 75 games, to put himself in contention and really kind of put up his pretty standard 25, 7, and 7 along those lines. And I think that'll be enough to get it done this year.
Yeah, I think that when I was going through, one of the facts that I found was that since 1985, the average seed for the MVP winner is 1.2. And so basically I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know, who's going to finish first or second in their conference? Only one player has ever won the award when they finished third in the last 30 years, and that's Michael Jordan. You may have heard of him.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Thinking about this, that really took some of the more popular picks out, James Harden and Russell Westbrook being probably those two guys. As far as I saw today, Westbrook is projected in Vegas for 28 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists a night. If he averages a triple-double, obviously we haven't seen that since the Big O did it back in the 60s. And I think if you're a James Harden supporter, voter, bettor, whatever you might be, you have to be a little worried about the Patrick Beverley injury.
Absolutely, and I think that those were two guys that I kind of considered myself as well. I think it's very plausible that Beard could throw up another 30-point game season. I think it's very possible that Westbrook could throw up a 25-10-10. I mean, the guy's shown it the last month and a half of 2 years ago when KD was out. He almost put up a triple-double the last month of the season. But really, as Mike mentioned, the seeding is truly a huge factor. Most valuable player. Definitely, you want to be on one of the top two, three teams in the conference. The Rockets and Thunder, they're probably not going to be there in the loaded West. I think LeBron could truly, really coast to that 25-7-7 in Kawhi. As Mike mentioned before, he's going to have the alpha dog status now in San Antonio. He's certainly a guy I considered as well. He's a consistent defensive stopper. So I certainly see where he's coming from with that pick.
Yeah, I basically, you know, factored it down to LeBron and Kawhi. You know, as Blake Griffin and Chris Paul have done in the past, Durant and Curry will probably split votes. When I was looking at the stats, I just came to, you know, decide that Kawhi Leonard is really good. He's gotten better every season, and this is his team now. Obviously, Tim Duncan has rode off into the Dungeons and Dragons sunset. He's, you know, probably somewhere, you know, playing his games with his Merlin tattoo. And this is Kawhi's team. He excels on offense more than we probably realize. He's obviously probably the best defensive player in the league. But I think that, as we've said, it really comes down to either LeBron or Kawhi here, and both are pretty solid choices. Moving along, Rookie of the Year. Both of us, new Philly resident, and I've been in Philly for a year now. Both of us are picking the big process, Joel Embiid. The fruits of Sam Hinkie's labor. Might finally be here. Obviously, Ben Simmons injured. Noel came out today that he's probably going to miss 3 to 5 weeks with quote-unquote minor knee surgery. As they say, it's always minor until it's your knee. And so Joel Embiid, if he's in condition, might have a big opportunity to put up some numbers in Philadelphia.
Absolutely, and I think one of the things for me was I kind of looked at Embiid as a type of guy who, a little bit similar to Blake Griffin a couple of years ago coming out of his rookie year, obviously missed the year that he was drafted in with surgery. Embiid, I mean, missed 2 years, but he's more mature, not as far as social media goes, might not be the most mature player in the league, but I think his physical development, he's really come a long way. I think he's got a real chance to put up maybe a 15-10, maybe 15-8, be a real centerpiece of the Philadelphia offense and the three bigs that they have there. So I really would like to see the development of Joel Embiid, and that's kind of why I went with him as my Rookie of the Year pick, as opposed to other people I consider like Chris Dunn coming off the bench in Minnesota, Buddy Hield, Jamal Murray, younger shooting guards both in New Orleans and Denver.
One of the stats that I found for this award is that 11 of the past 12 Rookie of the Year recipients have led all rookies in points per game. The only one not to do that was Derrick Rose, and he finished second. So you're looking for points. When we're looking at rookies, we're definitely looking for counting stats, and we're looking for opportunities. As you said, Chris Dunn, he's coming off the bench. You know, Tibbs historically is not a huge fan of rookies, and he might not have the opportunities that people may forecast him to have currently. I think Buddy Hield is a fine choice. I'm not the biggest Buddy Hield believer. I'm not entirely sure that his game will translate to the next level as well as people may think. He has short arms. He's not that strong defensively. But he can shoot the ball, and he's going to get a chance. Buddy Hield will definitely get to get shots up. If we're looking at points per game, I think that Joel Embiid definitely has the highest upside.
All right, so moving right along here, we're going to hop into our Coach of the Year picks. I picked Tom Thibodeau, of new head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves.
And I'm going with Quinn Snyder out in Utah.
Yes, I think that Mike and I both considered kind of similar people for the Coach of the Year picks. Obviously, I went with Tibbs. I know a lot of people are high on the Minnesota Timberwolves this year. I would probably include myself in that group of people. Tibbs obviously brings a great history of solid defensive teams. Doesn't really love rookies, I would say. But a lot of people are picking the Minnesota Timberwolves as a dark horse playoff team this year. And as Mike said, he picked Quinn Snyder. That was my closest cut of any of the picks that I made this year. And I think we'll get into the Jazz a bit more in our playoff predictions.
Yeah, Coach of the Year is an interesting award. We can't give it to Pop every year, as much as some of us might like to. And so it's kind of hard to determine exactly where the votes may fall or what people are thinking of in any given year. Obviously, Steve Kerr won it last year, you know, given the history that the Warriors made. It's no surprise, but this year the field looks like it might be more wide open. You know, Brad Stevens is another choice. Everybody's been high on him for a long time. President-elect Brad Stevens. We go back with Brad Stevens to his days at Butler, playing against Cleveland State, where we've seen many games. So we know Brad Stevens well. He's definitely a strong choice. Obviously, Pop's always in the conversation. I'm sure Steve Kerr might be in the conversation, and Coach Lou. In his first season could also sneak in there, but I'm going with Quinn Snyder because, as Jake said, people are high on the Jazz, and if the Jazz kind of live up to their potential, you know, they might be a 3-4 seed in the West, and Quinn Snyder with his strong defensive scheme will probably be a beneficiary of that.
Absolutely, and as Mike said, I really think that there's a real good chance that the Jazz could sniff 50 wins this year, if not more, right around that level. The reason I'm kind of going with Tibbs is obviously the reigning rookie of the year, Karl Anthony Towns, before him, Andrew Wiggins, that young core that they have there with Ricky Rubio at point, the new draft pick, Chris Dunn. I really think that the Timberwolves, they're young, they're hungry. Tibbs has a strong defensive scheme. You'd like to see them improve really from last year. Now, whether they jump into the top five, top 10, where we're used to seeing those Tibbs teams on the defensive end, that's remained to be seen. I really do think that they're going to improve pretty tremendously, and I believe that I have them in the top 8 in the Western Conference, and really as a dark horse that could challenge Golden State maybe to a couple games in the first round of the Western Conference playoffs.
Yeah, I think that if the Timberwolves improve on defense, they were 26th last year, we all expect them to definitely finish higher, that credit will go to Tibbs. And it's just a matter of where that ceiling gets to. Like you said, if they're top 5, top 10 in defense, especially with, you know, Towns, Wiggins, LaVine all being below average defenders last year, that's going to fall squarely on his shoulders, and it's going to look great for him, you know, when people are voting for this award. Next up, we have Sixth Man of the Year. Last year's winner, Jamal Crawford. Both of us this year are going with Andre Iguodala. What are you thinking?
So really, I think a lot of people last year felt that Iggy got robbed of the Sixth Man of the Year award. Personally, I picked Jamal Crawford. I thought that he was going to be the winner. Now, granted, did he deserve the award over Andre Iguodala? Probably not. Obviously, Mike and I were both from Cleveland. It's tough to pick a Golden State Warrior for every award, but really, I mean, how can you pick anyone else but Andre Iguodala with what he does for that Golden State Warriors death lineup? Really a huge piece as far as that team's success goes. I mean, he's not going to lead the league in points, not going to lead the Warriors in points, minutes, rebounds, really any stat, but I mean, he's a huge part of their success, and really it's tough to go with anyone else.
I think the Warriors might be on TV 82 times this year. I don't know. I haven't perused the schedule. If not for Patrick McCaw, then maybe Andre Iguodala might be able to win this award. It'd probably be tough for him. Granted that Patrick McCaw seems to have all of the buzz out of Warriors camp so far this preseason. But like Jake said, I think that Andre Iguodala probably deserved this award last year. There may have been some Warriors voter fatigue. Obviously, 73 wins, Steph Curry MVP, Steve Kerr Coach of the Year, Luke Walton Coach of the Year. No one really knows. Looking at the stats for Sixth Man of the Year, voters do like points. Obviously, the pushback last year with Jamal Crawford winning, whether or not he deserved it. Iguodala, key to the death lineup. He's my pick. Other guys that I considered, we got Z-Bo, maybe Three-Bo, coming off the bench this year in Memphis. Last year, he seemed a little bit upset about coming off the bench. Under new coach Dave Fizdale, who everyone seems to like, it appears as if he's a little more content in this role. He knows that JaMychal Green isn't better than him. I think we all know that. The second unit in Memphis is going to be barren if not for Z-Bo. He's shooting threes this preseason. He might be a key cog off the bench for them. I also looked at popular pick Brandon Knight. Looks like he's going to start the season off the bench. I'm not entirely sure that he's going to stay there. Obviously, you know, we have lots of guards down in Phoenix. Devin Booker breaking out last year, as well as Bledsoe, Knight. I'm not entirely sure what that guard rotation might look like, whether they might look to move either Bledsoe or Knight in the middle of the year, but much like Isaiah Thomas last year, who people were picking, I'm not entirely sure that Knight will come off the bench for the entire season.
Yeah, and as Mike mentioned, I think really what Coach Fizz has done in Memphis so far, moving Z-Bo to the bench and really making sure he's comfortable with that role. He's got him and Marc Gasol shooting a lot of three, not necessarily a lot of threes, but a couple a game as opposed to less than one a game for their entire careers. And I think Z-Bo really becomes a huge facilitator on that second unit for Memphis, running the offense through him, whether it's out of the high post or top of the key. Not necessarily a point forward role like we see with a lot of people, but kind of running the offense through him and being able to be comfortable with him with the ball in his hands and distributing to the Grizzlies. All right, so moving along to our most improved player of the year. Mike and I both, again, agreed on this award. We both went with Rodney Hood of the Utah Jazz. So, Mike, what do you have to say as far as that goes?
I love Rodney Hood this year. Looking at everything when I'm doing my Eastern Western Conference previews, looking at the season that CJ McCollum had last year for Portland, and I see a lot of that in Rodney Hood's game this upcoming season. While obviously it stinks that Gordon Hayward will be missing some time to start the season with his finger injury, I think that Rodney Hood is going to be the main beneficiary from that injury. He's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. He's a great three-point shooter. He needs to get to the free throw line a little bit more, but the way that I look at it, I think that there's definitely a trajectory there for him to be the most improved player this year and really take a leap on a, like we said before, really good Jazz team.
Absolutely, and I think the first point that you brought up with Gordon Hayward being out the first couple weeks of the season, with Rodney Hood maybe being the guy of that Utah Jazz offense and really coming into his own and in that role as the lead scorer, possibly lead ball handler even. I know that he's comfortable with the ball in his hands, as Mike said, great three-point shooter. And Quinn Snyder will certainly look to turn to him for a lot of minutes, a lot of shot opportunities, a lot of ball handling opportunities for that young Jazz team, and really kind of see what he can do.
Yeah, and I think that I've seen some people this preseason picking second-year guys like Booker before. D'Angelo Russell's been one of them. But I think that the second-year leap is one that's much more expected in this league, and therefore this award tends to go to third- or fourth-year guys. A lot of times it just goes to guys who get more opportunities. We saw that last year with CJ McCollum. He didn't necessarily change his per 36 numbers that much, but he had the opportunity to start and play big minutes for the Trailblazers. And if you're looking at for it from that perspective, you might take a look at maybe Dennis Schroeder down in Atlanta. Obviously, with Jeff Teague gone, he's going to have a ton of opportunity to basically play as many minutes as he can. Maybe Zach LaVine. You know, we've talked about the impact that Tibbs is going to have out in Minnesota. LaVine had a great second half last year, but it might have flew under the radar because, you know, people weren't really watching the Timberwolves as much with how bad that they were. And another guy that I considered is Marcus Smart out in Boston. Evan Turner's gone. Marcus Smart looks to be the guy that's going to step into that role with then Terry Rozier, shout out to Cleveland, filling the role that Smart had last year. And so Marcus Smart might have the opportunity to run more pick and rolls, but you know, Marcus Smart are obviously the worst shooter in the NBA. I can say that because it's true. That might be something that if he's not going to get a lot better at, would prevent him from being in this conversation. Final individual award we're going to cover is Defensive Player of the Year. We're both going with two-time defending Defensive Player of the Year, Kawhi Leonard.
So obviously, as Mike discussed and as I discussed in our MVP discussion earlier, Kawhi Leonard really going to be the guy in San Antonio this year, if he wasn't the guy last year in San Antonio. So I think really Kawhi, I mean, he's the guy that's going to be guarding the other team's best player night in, night out. He's got the LeBron James, the Kevin Durant. He's got those responsibilities night in, night out for one of the top two, three teams in the Western Conference. Pop's going to ask him to shoulder that load every single night, and I think Kawhi Leonard is more than willing to shoulder that load every single night. Obviously an extremely long, extremely rangy type player. As many people have talked about, guy's got unbelievably huge hands, just a very calm, steady player. Other players I consider for this award, Rudy Gobert, Draymond Green. But really for me, it was no contest as far as going Kawhi Leonard for this award.
As I said with my MVP pick, I think Kawhi's going to have a monster year. If he were to take home both the MVP and the Defensive Player of the Year, as I predict, he would be the third player to ever do so, joining Michael Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon. Which would be a pretty good company to join. I think that, you know, Kawhi is the best defender in the NBA. The Spurs are the best defensive team in the NBA. It remains to be seen if they'll stay that way with the loss of Tim Duncan. People are obviously going to be attacking the Tony Parker, Pau Gasol pick and roll pretty heavily. Kawhi, like you said, is drawing every premier assignment on a night-in, night-out basis. And he's obviously up to the challenge. He's proven that the last 2 years. If he wins again this year, he'll join Dwight Howard as the only guy to three-peat for this award. And I really don't see how anyone else finds a way to dethrone him.
Absolutely. And I mean, as I mentioned before, the other guys that I kind of consider were Dre and Gobert in Utah. Gobert, I mean, he's got a little bit of help as far as the interior goes with Derek Favors. They're both pretty premier shot blockers as far as the NBA is concerned. And then Draymond in Golden State, obviously, he's a Swiss Army knife type of guy, kind of similar to Kawhi, where he can guard pretty much almost 1 through 5 on the floor. But really, Kawhi, for me, I mean, he's going to be the guy in San Antonio. No one's going to take minutes away from him. I think there's going to be a lot less blowouts in San Antonio. They're going to be in a lot closer games. So Kawhi, really, he's going to be under the microscope this year.
Welcome back. And let's jump right into the All-NBA teams. I got to say, before we start, that this was incredibly difficult. I think that when you look through, you know, maybe whether you think it's the top 15 guys in the league, maybe top 20 guys in the league, the NBA is at its peak as far as I'm concerned. There are so many good players. There's so much talent. It's incredible to watch on a night-in, night-out basis. And trying to pick, you know, top 15 guys is really, really tough.
Yeah, and like Mike said, I mean, really, the talent as far as the league goes, it's incredibly deep. You could consider 3, 4, 5 different guys for the first team All-NBA guard spot, for the first team All-NBA forward spot, center spot. It was an incredibly difficult pick for us. I know that a lot of people struggle with making these predictions, but without further ado, we'll hop into our picks. My first team All-NBA, my two guard spots are Steph Curry and Russ Westbrook. My two forward spots are LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard. And rounding out my first team All-NBA at center is Boogie! DeMarcus Cousins. I'm a huge Boogie guy, as you might be able to tell.
I have the same first four. Only difference for me is that I'm spinning the yarn at center and I'm going with Kat. I guess my first question to you is, both of us didn't pick Kevin Durant. New Warrior. Do we think that Steph Curry's going to have a better year than Kevin Durant?
You know, I personally do believe that Steph Curry will have a better year than Kevin Durant. I think that Steph Curry's going to have the ball in his hand a little bit more often than Kevin Durant, obviously at the nominal point guard spot. Now, whether he's handling the ball on every possession, I mean, I know they like to put the ball in the hands of Draymond Green. I'm sure Kevin Durant will be handling the ball quite a bit. But I really do think that Steph, as the two-time reigning MVP, as a guy who's been with the Golden State Warriors the past 2 years, it'll almost be a situation where the Miami Heat of 2011 to 2014 with LeBron James there. I think that Kevin Durant will kind of feel the same way towards Steph. I think it really is Steph's team. Obviously, two-time reigning MVP, best shooter that we have ever seen in our lifetimes, that the league has really ever seen. And I don't think that he's really going to slow down at all.
I would tend to agree. I think that as much as we watch these preseason games, we see the Warriors getting incredible shots. Obviously, they're basically getting whatever they want. It's hard for me to think that everything's going to be seamless on day one. Probably likely that they're going to win 65, 70, whatever number of games you want to say, basically sleepwalking. Their talent level is so high. But I think that the level of consistency that you're going to see from Steph Curry that he's established is probably not going to change.
Absolutely. And like you mentioned, their ceiling is obviously much higher than any other team can hope to have. Their floor really is higher than most teams' ceiling. I think that Steph Curry is going to remain consistent. He's going to keep shooting the ball. Maybe he'll make 400 threes again. I'm not necessarily sure we'll see that type of production again. But as Mike said, Steph Curry's really kind of the centerpiece of that offense and really the central piece. I think he's going to be Mr. Consistency as far as they go.
Not to foreshadow the rest of our picks, but I don't have DeMarcus Cousins making any of my top three teams. You have him on the first team, so what are our thoughts there?
Absolutely. So I think that that Boogie as my first team center. I believe I picked Marc Gasol last year as my first team all center. DeMarcus Cousins, really, I think that he's one of the top 10-15 talents that the NBA has right now. I think that he's a guy that could create his own shots. He's obviously a force on the block. He's a guy that could get you 22, 23, 10, 12 a night. And he's the guy in Sacramento. Obviously, he's a very polarizing personality that they have there. And a lot of people are throwing his name around in rumors for him to possibly be traded this year sometime in Sacramento. But, you know, I think that he's, at the very least, he's going to be a great numbers on a bad team type of guy. If he gets dealt to a contender, I think he's going to continue to put up those numbers. But really, I think that he's one of those guys where his numbers will almost be too good to overlook on a team. And I think that Cat was my very close second pick, but I probably did let a little Boogie bias come through here. Shout out to my future dog named Boogie. But yeah, he's my pick. And what do you have to say about picking Cat as your first team guy?
Yeah, I'm buying in. I think that he had one of the best rookie seasons that we've seen in a long time. If you look at the viral video that Zach Harper tweeted just yesterday, you see Karl Anthony Towns hitting a 25-foot step-back jumper from the corner. That's some of the talent that he has. This guy can play inside, outside. He's obviously the best player in Minnesota, the team that will probably take a leap. I think that Tibbs is going to be able to kind of build up all of his skills just a little bit. It might not be a huge boost in any one category, but I think that he's just going to be better this year. People are obviously going to be talking about him, and that's why I have him as my first team center.
So now we're going to jump into our second team All-NBA picks. My team reads as follows: CP3, Chris Paul, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin, and Karl Anthony Towns rounding out my top five. And now we're going to jump over to Mike's five, and then we're going to talk about our toughest cuts as far as that team goes.
I have Chris Paul and James Harden in the backcourt as well. I also have the villain, Kevin Durant, the nut puncher, Draymond Green, and DeAndre Jordan, hoping to build off of a nice Olympic run.
I think for me, the toughest cut on this team was probably twofold, Draymond Green and DeAndre Jordan, like Mike had on his team. I think if there's going to be one guy on Golden State's team whose production falls off a little bit, I think it might be Draymond Green. I know that there have been a number of articles as far as he goes, as far as his tough summer, the things that he's gone through. Obviously, he's not going to be the guy in Golden State. I mean, third banana, really, to Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. I think that his production could fall off a bit. And then Mike's first team center, Karl Anthony Towns, he was my second team pick. DeAndre Jordan, obviously an incredible talent in Los Angeles, catching lobs from CP3, and a great defensive center point as far as the Clippers' success goes. But that's where my toughest cuts fell as far as the second team goes.
I would say that the pick on this team that I'm least confident in is actually Chris Paul. There have been rumors that he's going to take a smaller defensive load this year, maybe guarding shooting guards. I'm not entirely sure how that will work out. Blake Griffin, obviously back. If he can reach his, you know, top 10, top 5 player in the NBA from two postseasons ago, we might see Paul's usage rate go down a little bit. And one of my 13 guards, Damian Lillard, I think that he might be able to jump up into that second team. He had a ridiculous second half of the season last year. He shot nearly 47% from three. Obviously, Damian Lillard is not the defender that Chris Paul is. But like I said, I think that there might be a step back for Chris Paul on the defensive end, and that might, you know, bump him down to third team.
Absolutely, and just, I guess, with that segue from Damian Lillard, you said he's your third team, or one of your all-third team guards. My third team is Dame Lillard, Kyrie, Anthony Davis, and then I also added Draymond Green on that third team, and then rounding it out is Rudy Gobert.
Like I said, I have Dame Lillard, I got Uncle Drew as well, I got Paul George, Blake Griffin, and Rudy Gobert as the third team center.
I think that we're both pretty high on Rudy Gobert. We've talked ad nauseum almost at the Utah Jazz's possible success. Gobert's been an incredible defensive force as far as they go when he's healthy and when he can stay on the floor. He's improved his free throw shooting a bit this year. He could be a little bit better scorer. Might see him step out a little bit outside the paint. I mean, obviously, a lot of people saw the vines last year of his elbow jumper, if you would call it that. I mean, really, the two guards, Dame and Kyrie, incredible scorers, incredible ball handlers, incredible shooters. And then one guy that I had on my team that I know Mike didn't have on his team is Brow. I mean, he was my MVP pick last year, a guy who couldn't really stay on the floor. But really, I mean, one of the most talented players of these 15 that we've named. You want to talk a bit about your third team and the differences that you had or tough cuts that you might have had?
Anthony Davis has burned me too many times. picked him to win MVP last year, too. It seemed that every time I rostered him in FanDuel, he would leave the game with an injury, and I'm just really sick and tired of it. And I know I probably should have picked him, but I'm leaving him off. He played 60 games last year. He plays 60 games every year. It just bothers me a lot. And so he's obviously talented. He could very well crack really any of these teams with his ceiling, depending on whether he's rostered as a center or a forward, but I'm leaving him off. I had some trouble with that final guard spot. I threw Kyrie in there, like I said. You know, struggled a little bit coming back from injury last year. You'd think he'd have a better regular season. Obviously, Kyle Lowry up in Toronto, pretty strong pick. If you wanted to, you know, insert him in there, I don't think I'd have a problem. Before Gordon Hayward went down, I considered him, but I ended up going Blake and Paul George. And, you know, like you said, I think we're both very high on Rudy Gobert. If the Jazz have one All-Star this year, I would think that it would be Gobert. I would think that he'd be a huge reason why they are successful. And as you can see, I think that that's, you know, someone that we're projecting to jump into the top maybe three centers in the league that you wouldn't think about.
Absolutely, and also on your team, I mean, you had Paul George and Blake Griffin, two incredible talents. Paul George, obviously one of the top two-way wings in the league, and then Blake Griffin, shout out, No Long Two's leading man as far as last year's statistic goes. Maybe he'll step out a little bit.
Shoot some threes, man!
Yeah, come on, Blake, step back, like, half step, that's all you need. I mean, he's going to be a guy who facilitates the offense a bit when CP3 takes a breather, so, I mean, he's going to put up numbers as well.
We're sick of having Blake Griffin as our logo, and it's been a week. Hopefully by first week of this season, we'll have someone else up there, maybe who's not as good. So, Blake, come on. Step back. Shoot some threes. Talk to JJ Redick. Just shoot some threes. Our final individual category, we have all defensive team. We're just doing the first team. I got Ricky Rubio, Danny Green. He just got hurt, so who knows if that's a good pick. Kawhi Leonard, Draymond Green, Rudy Gobert.
And then right along with that, I mean, I have the same. I have four of the five same guys, Rubio, Kawhi, Dre, and Gobert. My one difference is Marcus Smart. He's a guy who's been banged up a little bit as well, but really think he's a true bulldog on the defensive end. He could guard really 1-3, maybe even 1-4, as we saw in the Hawks series last year, guarding Millsap a bit.
Yeah, the real only thing that I would say is obviously neither of us have Chris Paul on here. I talked a little bit about the regression I foresee from him on that end. People underappreciate Ricky Rubio. Hopefully he gets the respect that he deserves on that end this year. There's been a lot of talk about Chris Dunn potentially cracking the starting lineup, or, you know, maybe even moving Rubio out of Minnesota. I think that's ridiculous. I hope Tibbs also sees that as ridiculous. I'd really like to see Rubio get more hype, especially as the Timberwolves get better.
So now we're going to jump into our preseason picks as far as standings go for the Eastern and Western Conference. We're going to start off with the East. We're going to run through 1-8, maybe talk about some of our tough cuts, and then after that we'll jump into our West. So I have the Cleveland Cavaliers winning the Eastern Conference yet again, followed by the Celtics, the Raptors, Pistons, Hornets, Hawks, Wizards, and bring up the 8 seed, the Chicago Bulls.
I also have the Cleveland Cavaliers winning the East. I have the Toronto Raptors second, the Boston Celtics third, the Charlotte Hornets, shout out Hornets, fourth, the Pistons fifth, the Hawks sixth, the Wizards seventh, and the Indiana Pacers eighth. I would have had the Pistons fourth if not for the injury to Reggie Jackson. I don't have a lot of faith in fellow Deacon Ish Smith. Sorry, Deacon fans everywhere. Obviously, I have the Raptors over the Celtics. People have Celtics over Raptors. I think that the Raptors, while they won't have the year that they had last year, have the continuity. I have the Pacers limping into the playoffs in the 8 seed. I know people have been somewhat high on them with the additions of Jeff Teague, which I actually think is a net negative with George Hill, as well as Thad Young, who can't shoot at all. So I'm not sure where that spacing is going to come from with Monte Ellis, but that's my 8. My most difficult cut, as you said, was the Bulls. As Nate Duncan has been calling them, the Chicago Black Holes. We went over this in the Eastern Conference preview, but I have no idea where the shooting is going to come from on that team.
The Chicago Bulls, I mean, I picked them as my 8 seed in the East. They're an extremely interesting, to say the least, type of team. I mean, if they run out of starting five of Rajon Rondo, Dwayne Wade, Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, and Robin Lopez, I mean, who's gonna be able to shoot the ball on that team? I mean, the highest percentage guy is who? Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, and Butler.
He's been the low 30s in his career. He's going to be really maybe their only two-way guy as far as their team goes. He's going to shoulder a huge load on both ends.
Rajon Rondo stinks on defense. Let's just make sure that everybody knows that, because people don't talk about it enough.
Yeah, just because you have hashtag wingspan doesn't mean that you are a great defender. The guy might have big hands, the guy might have long arms, but that does not mean that he is a great defender. We both went with the Cavs at the top of our Eastern Conference. I think it's almost a...
It's not biased, we promise.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe pick as far as that goes. I bumped the Celtics up to my 2 seed. I'm not as high on them as some people, Bill Simmons. I don't think they're going to be a 55-60 win team, but I really do think that that their team, I mean, a lot of people talk about them not having one superstar, really them having five stars, making one superstar. I mean, me personally, I'd rather have one LeBron James and a bunch of other people surrounding him. But I really do think the Celtics are a dangerous team. I mean, Brad Stevens, we talked about at the top with one of our Coach of the Year perennial picks. The Raptors, I do think that the loss of Biombo will be a lot bigger than most people think. I think he's a huge presence on their defensive end. I do think that the Raptors, or the Drakes, as some people call them, will. I think they are going to be a good team, and I could very easily see them sliding up to that 2 seed. But me personally, I bumped the C's up to the 2 seed in my Eastern Conference picks.
If the C's bump up to the 2 seed, Drake might be a Celtics fan instead of a Raptors fan, so you really never know. If you're a beak wetter, shout out to the Hornets, 4-1 to win the Southeastern Conference. Love that pick. Also, love the Nets over.
Absolutely. I think Mike and I, we would certainly love to wet the beak with the Nets over, what is it, 20 and a half wins?
Yeah, 20 and a half wins.
Yeah, I think a lot of our models, a lot of our projections love the Nets over this year.
Yeah, and I'm sad about Chris Middleton. I wish he didn't get hurt. I think the Bucks could have made the playoffs. We still love Point Giannis. He's still going to be fun to watch. We got a lot of grit up there now with Deli.
Yeah, miss you, Deli.
But, you know, Chris Middleton was probably the key to that team. I think that the Bucks will miss the playoffs by a lot of games now. Finally, the West, also known as the Warriors and everyone else. My projections have the Warriors winning 70 games this year. I have the Spurs second, the Clippers third, the Jazz fourth, the Rockets fifth, the Thunder sixth, the Blazers seventh, and the T-Wolves eighth.
The really only difference that we have as far as our Western Conference go, like Mike said, it's really the Golden State Warriors and everyone else. They could basically limp to 70 wins, which is astounding. But I flipped our 2 and 3 seeds. I had the Clippers, despite their lackluster, to say the least, preseason performances. I have them as my 2 seed, and the San Antonio Spurs, I'm not as high on them as I think Mike and his MVP pick, Kawhi Leonard. I have them as my 3 seed.
One thing I think that was most difficult for me here is it was actually the 8th seed. I think that the top 7 seeds in some order are fairly certain. Obviously barring injuries, you never hope to see those, but those are probably the 7 best teams in the Western Conference. Obviously, the Jazz missed the playoffs last year with 40 wins. But if you look at their point differential, we actually expect them to be a 46-win team last year. So them building on a baseline of 46 wins sounds a lot less ridiculous for them to get up to maybe that 50 number that a lot of people have seen. And then, obviously, we both have the T-Wolves in the 8 spot, which means that we're both picking Memphis and Dallas to miss the playoffs. Dallas might burn us. Rick Carlisle knows what he's doing. As long as Dirk doesn't regress, that's a team that's going to be in contention. But they have Harrison Barnes leading their team, and we all saw what happened to Harrison Barnes last year in the finals. So that's why I'm not picking Dallas. I've talked about this in the Western Conference preview. I hate Memphis's bench. I don't think it's good. They have a ton of injuries. They have a ton of injury history. We haven't even seen Chandler Parsons yet. Don't know when we're going to see him on the floor. Mike Conley, Marc Gasol coming off of major injuries. I think that the Grizzlies might be a team that will underachieve this year.
Absolutely. And like Mike mentioned, the Grizzlies and Mavericks are two teams that were two of the toughest cuts for me. Rick Carlisle obviously gets the most out of his teams year in, year out. The guy's an absolute wizard with his team. He's got Andrew Michael Bogut holding it down in the center position. Andrew Michael Bogut, I guess that's a thing now. That's new to me. But I'm all in on Andrew Michael Bogut as far as the full name goes. Harry Barnes, obviously he was on the Olympic team barely. Not sure he got...
Was he?
Yeah. Not sure. Memphis, Coach Fizz. I think that a lot of guys are bought in on his schemes.
LeBron loves Coach Fizz.
Yeah, he's definitely one of LeBron's guys, so that's obviously a huge thing. We saw that with Shabazz Napier. Obviously a huge talent. One other team that I kind of considered as far as one of my tough cuts, the Denver Nuggets. I think that they have a couple young guys on their team. I know that that Mike and I are both extremely high on one player in particular. Mike, you want to talk a bit more about Nikola Jokic?
Yeah, the Nuggets are the RPM darlings. You know, right around 40 wins. Vegas likes the Nuggets this year, too. I spent a lot of money yesterday in my auction draft on Nikola Jokic. He's a great passer. If you haven't seen his game, he loves to operate from the elbows. He gets most of his touches there. He's a very good defender. He's not necessarily getting the blocks, but he moves his feet well. I expect him to extend his range out to three-point land this year, hopefully let him play alongside Yusuf Nurkic, who was injured for much of last year. Love the return of Wilson Chandler. I think that's going to be huge if they want to go small. As you can kind of see from this, they can go big, they can go small. They have a lot of different combinations. Emmanuel Mudiay in his second year, hopefully not going to turn the ball over every possession. That might be a plus for them. Gary Harris going to miss some games to start the year. We might see Jamal Murray. It's likely that we see Will Barton in that starting role. The Nuggets are definitely very deep. They might be a team that could sneak in at the end of the playoffs.
And I think the Nuggets, as Mike talked about in his Western Conference preview, Emmanuel Mudiay, he had a bit of a shooting spike in the second half of the season after the All-Star break. It definitely improved his shooting. I'm one of those people who I'm personally more high on Jamal Murray than Buddy Hield. Whether he fits alongside Emmanuel Mudiay, whether he can help him as far as ball handling goes, as far as shooting goes, creating his own shot, that will remain to be seen. But I certainly think that that Gary Harris being out to start the year and Jamal Murray getting some possibly big minutes or bigger minutes than we originally expected, I think that could come a long way in his development. So I certainly think the Nuggets are an interesting team. Whether they're going to be a 40-win team, I'm not extremely confident in that. But I certainly think they're an interesting team, and at the very least, one of our League Pass teams.
Oh, yeah. We will be watching the Nuggets on League Pass this year.
Shout out Quad Box.
I will be watching the Rockets to start the year. I'm excited to see what Mike D'Antoni does. Obviously, Harden's been averaging all of the assists in the preseason. They may not guard anyone. If they can get to a top two or three offense, if they get to a 20th ranked defense, they might be okay. It's going to be difficult. Obviously, Patrick Beverly is going to miss a lot of the beginning of the season. We have Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, James Harden on the floor together at the same time. Trevor Ariza regressed last year. Clint Capella, we don't know what we're going to get for him. But I think that we're going to be tuning into the Rockets earlier in the year to see exactly what we might expect from that squad.
Definitely. I'm really high on Ryan Anderson, actually. I think that he's a dark horse to possibly lead the league in three-pointers made with someone not named Steph Curry. I think that Ryan Anderson is really going to be really bombs away this year in that Mike D'Antoni scheme, really spread the floor, be one of the truest stretch fours that we've ever seen. He's a guy, he's a great shooter with doesn't even really need time and space. But I think that he's going to be a guy who's helped a lot by that Mike D'Antoni scheme. The Rockets will certainly be an interesting team this year. I mean, bang the over as far as each game goes.
And if Mike D'Antoni could regrow the mustache, that would greatly improve our league pass experience. So Mike, please grow a mustache again. We miss it.
And now we're going to do our picks for as far as who's going to win the East, who's going to win the West. And it's pretty sad for me to say, I think really I speak for both of us when I think it's going to be very sad. I think we both have the Cavs, and then we both have the Warriors meeting again for the third straight finals. The first time that two teams would ever meet in three straight finals. And we both have the Warriors bring it home this year, 2 out of 3 years.
Yeah, I think that everybody's picking the three-peat here. I don't think that there's a lot of questions barring major injury. I've seen people refer to it as League A and League B. We got the Cavs and the Warriors and everyone else. But yeah, I think we're picking the Warriors. This is the greatest collection of talent the NBA has probably ever seen on one team. I wrote about in my Western Conference preview that they may have problems protecting the rim. Zaza Pachulia concerns me, but if they're playing the death lineup, I don't think that matters. We obviously won one for the land this year. It was one of the greatest days of both of our lives, I would say. But I just don't see how, barring major injury, the Cavs can quite get over the hump this season.
Yeah, and like Mike said, 2016 has been an incredible year for us Cavs fans. We were able to bring one home this year. But to repeat this upcoming season, especially with the collection of talent that Golden State has, with Kevin Durant signing with them this summer, it's really almost impossible to pick anyone but Golden State. Their team is absolutely incredible. We've talked an incredible amount about how they could sleepwalk to 65, 70 wins, and no one else in the league could really sniff that. As Mike said again here and in his Western Conference preview, really one of the weak spots that Golden State could have is protecting the rim. We saw it last year when Bogut was out. LeBron and Kyrie being able to attack the rim, being able to attack them on the offensive glass with a guy like Tristan Thompson. Kevin Love really came on to his old self and as far as his rebounding goes. But really this year it's nearly impossible to pick the Cavs, pick really anyone but Golden State. It's basically them and everyone else this year.
If LeBron James defeats this Golden State Warriors team, he's the GOAT. That's all I have to say. If you're in this for the basketball, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate you listening to our first ever episode. As we said at the beginning, we're looking for suggestions. We're looking for different things to do. We're going to hope to come at you once or twice a week. We're going to be on paper. We're going to be in the podcast. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. We hope you join us in the future. Hit me on Twitter at MsVagno11. Hit the No Long Twos account on Twitter at No Long Twos. And if you want to hear some baseball talk, tune in after the break.
And now for something completely different.
We're going to do about 5 minutes on the World Series. As you know, Cleveland fans here, the Indians are in the World Series playing America's team, the Cubs. We've been glued to the screens all postseason. We're locked in. We're ready to go. Game one is on Tuesday. It's my dad's birthday. It's going to be the greatest day in the land. So we're just going to talk briefly about what we foresee from this series, and then we'll get out of here.
Absolutely. So what? Game one, two, and three matchups, I believe, as of just a couple minutes ago, as of this recording, are set. Game one is going to be Kluber and Lester. Game two, we're looking at Arrieta and Trevor Bauer. in Cleveland. You may remember him with the bloody pinky. And then game three, we're going to have a couple of soft-tossing righties. The Professor, Kyle Hendricks, and Josh Tomlin. A great story.
The little cowboy.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are the first three matchups. Game four, Cubs are probably looking at John Lackey, and game four for the Indians is TBD. Might see Danny Salazar. That'd be pretty incredible.
He's throwing a three-inning simulated game today. If he's healthy, we'd love to see him. If not, we got the wedding registration of Ryan Merritt to the hill. He's obviously Josh Tomlin, light left-handed specialist. He pitched well for us against Toronto. We're excited to see Ryan Merritt out there if he's our guy.
So I think really one of the biggest thing that this series comes down to, and really what we saw in the CS series for each teams is the pitching. The Cubs offense obviously struggled a little bit until games 5 and 6. And then the Indians offense, I mean, we hit, 183 in our series, and that was the lowest ever average for a team to win the CS. Francisco Lindor led the way at 7 for 19. And then, really, I mean, the pitching staff held down for us. And the incredible bullpen, Andrew Miller in the back end.
Grim Reaper.
Yeah, Cody Allen. Brian S-word.
We'll bleep that out.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the biggest Brian Shaw guy, but he's been incredible this postseason. Guy throwing 95 mile an hour cutters. So what do you have as far as your outlook for the World Series?
I think that the managerial advantage and the base running advantage that the Indians have had throughout the first two rounds is definitely lessened. Obviously, Tito and Joe Maddon are both Hall of Famers. The Cubs were the fourth best base running team in baseball. The Indians were the second best base running team in baseball. You're going to see the Indians try to run all over John Lester in game one, make the guy throw the ball to first. I think that we like where we're at with Corey Kluber in game one. He's been a machine. He's always been a machine. Lester is obviously one of the better postseason pitchers in recent memory. But like I said, I think the Indians are really going to try to rattle him and run all over the place. I think we have the bullpen advantage. Aroldis Chapman has struggled this playoffs. Andrew Miller, obviously best reliever in the game. We can use him at any time. Tito manages a bullpen probably better than anyone. Excited to see what he does in the National League Park. We might see the Tito shuffle at least 5 times a game. It's going to be electric. I'm excited.
I'm extremely excited as well. Don't be surprised to see Andrew Miller get an at-bat or two this series in the NL Park. I honestly wouldn't be shocked to see it. I mean, the way that Tito's used him out of the pen in long relief. Another thing that I would certainly look for, like Mike mentioned, is base running. The Dodgers, it was something that they looked like they were going to do against John Lester, getting 20-foot leads, jumping all over the place, but really not taking advantage of it. Wouldn't be shocked to see a Rajai Davis bunt to really start off game one. If he gets on base, really, to take off. Really, if anyone gets on base, I think they have the green light on Lester. But as Mike mentioned, Tito's done an incredible job with this bullpen. Andrew Miller, the addition of him, I mean, I know a lot of people question possibly giving up Justice Sheffield, Clint Frazier, a couple other guys in that trade. I've been in love with it really since day one. The guy's truly the best reliever that's in the game right now, with respect to Zach Britton, with respect to Aroldis Chapman. But really extremely excited for this series. An incredible year for Cleveland fans all around. 2016, I mean, really is the year of the land. Mike and I can attest to that ourselves. Mike's going to be in attendance game 1 and 2 of the World Series. Mike's going to be in attendance game one opening night for the Cavs to see them raise the banner. So what else you got?
I think I'm confident. I don't know. Things keep breaking weird for this city, for this team. We've celebrated a lot this year, probably more than we have in our lifetimes combined. And so I'm just happy to keep it going. I'm happy to be back in Cleveland. I think it's going to be incredible downtown, probably starting up around maybe 6 o'clock, pregame for the Cavs, pregame for the Indians. The people are obviously going to be into it in both Chicago and Cleveland. And I'd say I'm confident. I'm going to go Tribe in 6.
And, you know, I think I'm right there with you as far as Tribe in 6 goes. I think this team's got a chance to clinch it at home. If not in 6, I definitely think Tribe in 7. I'm rolling with the Tribe. I think that our pitching gives us not necessarily a big advantage, but I think we're definitely happy with where we're at despite the injuries that we have. I think our lineup, the platoon advantages that we have, and I think Terry Francona, I mean, the guy's been to the World Series before. He's won a title before. He's broken a curse before. So I think that the Indians keep the Cubs curse streak going. I think that that the baseball's out of stitches. I think that the Cubs streak keeps going. I think the Indians snap their 68-year drought. Yes, I think the Indians snap their 68-year drought. I think they won their first one since 1948.
Brief shout out to my dad, who is bringing goats to the stadium before game one.
Shout out to the emperor.
So, yeah, thanks, Dad. Keep the curse alive. If you see goats outside the Jake before game one, that was my dad. So, appreciate it. Once again, thanks to everyone for tuning in. We'll hope to get back in your ears maybe by middle of this week, next weekend, depending on travel and what's going on in the league. We'll try to come at you with first week of NBA action. We're excited. We're going to be watching League Pass. We're going to be watching the World Series. And thanks again for joining us. And thanks, Jake.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here.
This is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO has been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.